Hi there. Thanks again for joining us for the podcast. I'm Tom Schultz, host of Voices of Montana. Today, it's Voices EDU, something we do on a regular basis as we look at our education system. Two Montana schools have recently been selected as National Blue Ribbon Schools. Pretty cool. What's going on in their classrooms? Got to be some good things. So we talked today with Superintendent of Public Instruction, Elsie Arnston, and also the principal from Ridgeview Elementary School, which is one of the recipients, Matho Johnston. And then from Cascade Public Schools, it's Principal Nicole Pieper. And then a bit later on, we talk with Amanda Meyer. She's the Executive Director of the Haber Public Schools Education Foundation. That foundation, on a yearly basis, gives out $40,000 to students for scholarships. You know, and it helps financially, but it also may just be the encouragement that some of these students need to pursue their dreams and to achieve their goals. We learn more about that today on Voices of Montana. First, let's start out with our friend, Superintendent of Public Instruction, Elsie Arnston. Good morning, Elsie. How are you?
Good morning. What a beautiful Thursday morning across our great state.
Yes, it is. And thank you for being here. Let's talk first about this recognition, what this, what it means. What are National Blue Ribbon Schools?
Well, first off, I just want to give a great shout out that we need more celebrations in education right now.
Yeah.
Within everything that is going on, and the uncertainty most especially, we need to make sure that we do have those, great celebration moments. More pizza parties, more ice cream socials, and more parents understanding what is happening in education and a great partnership with our schools. So, Blue Ribbon Schools, it's a traditional award that has been given for 39 years in our nation, and Montana has always risen to the top, and it has to deal with not just the entire population, but different groups of students within the school and how they excel. Yes, it is about, you know, those three R's, and it is about math and reading and arithmetic. We can say that. It is about all of those. But more importantly, it's about the interaction in the community with the school. So I think that is a great shout-out that's happening in Gallatin County, you know, with the elementary school that we have as Ridgeview, and in Cascade County with Cascade Elementary. So great community support and a great opportunity for Montana to celebrate.
Let's just welcome Matho Johnston then, and thank you, Elsie, for that. Matho's online. He's the principal of Ridgeview Elementary School. I happen to have lived right next to that school for a number of years in Belgrade, and it's pretty darn cool. Matho, Principal Johnston, how are you, sir?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Great. Yeah, you're on the line here. Tom Schultz, Voices of Montana with Elsie Arnston. And congratulations on this recognition. I'm just going to start off with, what are some of the good things going on in your classroom?
Oh, boy. We don't have enough time for all of that. I think what Superintendent Arnston was just saying, there's a lot that goes into it as far as a community. We do a lot of professional learning communities within our buildings. We're doing standards-based instruction. The community around Ridgeview is so supportive of our school. It makes our jobs a little bit easier when we have the parental support and the business community support. The teachers are just a great group of people, and they genuinely, support each other in and out of the classroom. It's just a great feeling being in that building.
Elsie, and if you've got questions or comments, just pipe in there. You can co-host, all right? Please co-host this program.
Well, I very much appreciate you having a school leader on, and congratulations, Principal Johnston. I mean, my heavens. Right now with this time, this is a different school year than it was last year. There isn't a federal order, and there isn't a governor order. So, you are leading parents, you're leading your teachers, and you're part of a district there that's very next to a very large growth district. In fact, your district is growing. So if you could share with the listeners on how that is happening in education right now.
Well, Belgrade has been exploding for probably the last 30 years or so. So there's always a catch-up that you have to play. You can't always build schools fast enough to keep up with the growth. But our district is trying to be as proactive as we possibly can. You know, we partner with an organization out of Billings to help with curricular decisions and professional development for our teachers. And, you know, trying to communicate that out to parents, you know, the old way of teaching and learning is changing. It's evolving. And we're just trying to meet the students where their needs are and trying to teach them in new and in innovative ways. And that's about all we can do. And whatever kids show up, we'll meet them where they are and take them as high as we can possibly go.
A lot of challenges today, Principal Johnston. Number one, of course, the pandemic, and this goes back to a year, and now we're, as Superintendent Arnston had said, things are a little bit different this year. Give us your take on how the students have adjusted, and I always want to ask, not in a negative way, but you know, what have we lost? What do we need to do to regain if we did lose educationally through this last couple of years?
Well, I think that comes down to we follow what is called multi-tiered systems of support. So, you know, we try to individualize everything we can for as many students as we possibly can. The challenge is personnel in the buildings. I think it's not uncommon everywhere you go. Businesses are looking for employees. School districts are looking for employees. So the hard part with school districts is keeping up with the local job market and being able to pay people to get into our buildings. So we have to be a little bit more creative in how we support students and try to individualize that education to boost them from where they are to where we think they need to be. You know, we tackle it with anybody and everybody in our building. It's an all hands on approach.
And if I can just shout out for sure, do you realize what he's talking about? He's talking about students, putting each student first. And when you've got a growth district like this and you've got uncertainty, it does take adults to help our children. But a great shout out, Principal, and of course to Superintendent Saunders about making sure that the kids are first. And that's what education is all about. I thank you. My hat's off to you, sir.
Let me ask you this, Matho. How do you individualize education?
Well, you start with looking at the students and trying to assess specifically what skills they have and which skills there are gaps in. And then you try and target those skills that have gaps along with trying to progress them through the grade level standards so that they're meeting those, but also trying to support them in the gaps that they might have. So, you know, the question is with the pandemic and, you know, potential learning loss, what are they missing and where can we find some supports to try and get those gaps filled in? And that's basically, it's pretty a simple concept, but it's not simple to implement.
Yeah. And could you give us an example?
Well, you know, we have some paraprofessionals in our building, some teacher aides. We have Title I supports in our building. We have differentiated instruction in the classrooms. Those are kind of things that teachers will try to individualize some of those small group work to try and help students that might be missing, you know, maybe some phonics skills or some math computation skills. And just try to reinforce that concept with them over and over and over again until they show proficiency at those standards. If they're missing something from a grade level before, then, you know, that might be where some title support comes in to try and reinforce those and boost those skills back up to as close to grade level as we possibly can. So it's always a moving, flexible, fluid concept. Once they have it, then we keep moving forward and take them to the next spot.
Elsie, I want to have your comments too on individualizing education, because Montana has what, 150,000 students enrolled in 800 plus schools?
Exactly. And because of our rural nature, a smaller district, you know, knows their students and can personalize at a more efficient manner. But in a larger district, especially a growth district like Belgrade, it is a challenge. And what we don't have seat time anymore. In other words, we don't pay per how many minutes or hours a student sits within that classroom. It's all proficiency based. So the principal is exactly spot on. It's a moving target. But more importantly, it's teaching to strengths. So once those skills are mastered, it's moving to that next strength. And hopefully, you know, it's not just based on an age determination. It's based on what children know, what they come in with a learning inventory, what we can add to it with that great investment of public tax dollars, and then graduate them whenever they feel that the district resounds, that the state standards have been accomplished, proficiency is there, and we move them out into the world where they can create a job, where they can do all kinds of things to promote their family and have a better way of life for Montana. And that's building Montana. That's what our public education system is doing with personalized learning.
Elsie Arnston, Superintendent of Public Instruction. Ridgeview Elementary from Belgrade, Principal Mathol Johnston with us here. We just got a couple of minutes, Principal Johnston. I want to address closing the achievement gap, because in this recognition as a national blue ribbon school, that's one of the criteria. What works in helping to achieve that?
Well, I think it goes back to that individualized attempt to boost every single student individually. You know, we take a look at the student, exactly what they know through assessments, and we try to break it down into skills that can not only increase that individual specific skill, but that skill that translates into other standards, into other areas. It might even be cross-curricular, something in math that they learned that could help them in science, something in reading that could help them in social studies. So it's always an individual approach as best as we possibly can to try and boost those students that need that help. But it's also those students that are already showing mastery. What can we do to challenge them? What can we do to enrich their educational experience and take them higher? So it's not always just about the student that is having some struggles academically. It might be social emotional learning that is causing a block. So we have people in place to help with that. So there's a lot that goes into each individual student, and we try to look at every student specifically as best we can.
Congratulations, Principal Johnston. I appreciate the work that you and all of your educators and administrators and employees are working toward for our education and our kids. Be back in a bit.
There's a beast lurking in the local woods, a ravenous creature with chrome hooves, steel teeth, and a growl that rattles mountaintops. It's tough as timber, faster than lightning, and smart like a fox. The beast shows no fear. It doesn't have to. It owns these parts. Are you the hero who will tame this beast? Visit your local Montana Ford dealer or buyfordnow.com to see why the all-new redesigned Ford F-150 is more beastly than ever before.
Pretty cool recognition. I like when our schools are recognized, because there's a lot of work that goes on behind the scenes that we don't know about. Parents getting involved, that's a huge part of this as well. It's Voices EDU Today, Superintendent of Public Instruction, Elsie Arnston with us here, Tom Schultz alongside for Voices of Montana. As we now talk with one of the other schools that was recognized, a national blue ribbon school in Montana, and Principal Nicole Pieper is with us here. She's the principal of the junior high school in Cascade. And good morning, Principal Pieper. How are you?
I'm fantastic. It's great to be talking with you.
Thank you for being here. You're on with Elsie Arnston here, Superintendent of Public Instruction. I'm sure you two are acquainted.
Well, good morning. You know, as large as our state is, it's great to have great leaders here and to take the time from the daily to talk to everybody across our state on the radio. So good morning, Principal.
Good morning.
Let's start with the recognition for your school system. It was Cascade Elementary. What did that do for the – let's just start with the morale. What did that do for the morale of the educators?
Our whole staff is just over the moon excited about it. You know, they put in such hard work every single day, and they never seek recognition. Mm-hmm. But something like this is just, it's so incredibly special, because it does help confirm all of the hard work that we are putting in You know, I mean, we see the results in every single student every single day, but it's nice when it is a public recognition so that our community can also take pride in sharing our accomplishments with us and, just bringing that out in the open that our teachers work endlessly, to improve the students' lives here at Cascade Public Schools. And, it's an amazing honor and, very well deserved for those teachers.
Yeah. It should make the entire community, feel good as well. As I said in our opening here, there are obviously this recognition means there's some good things going on in your classrooms. What are some of those good things going on in your classrooms?
You know, we have a 4-day school week here at Cascade, and that allows our teachers to have professional development at least 8 hours every single month, and our teachers take that time to analyze student data, come up with intervention plans so that every child is getting at least 1 year's growth in their education, if not more, for those students that are behind where we would like them to be. And so then we do things like we have walk to reading and walk to math for our students. We use aids to help support our kids. Teachers are constantly working with kids. Even during recess, we've got a schedule worked out. So supervision on the playground is happening, but then teachers are also working with groups of students during that time to help them get where they need to be.
Elsie, you might want to follow up on that.
Oh, you know, in the last discussion, we talked about personalized learning, and it was directed on the student. What I really appreciate Principal Peoples talking about is that professional development of our teachers. You know, what we've learned from this pandemic and the uncertainty is that creating that teacher that is nimble, that understands the focus on the student, and is willing to be not different, but willing to be innovative. And I think that is one of the discussion points that's happening in all of our schools, but done so well at Cascade Schools. The other aspect of this is, in a 4-day work week, making sure that those teachers have time to talk to one another so that they can embrace that student holistically with everyone. So it is the custodian. It is the lunch aide. It's the principal. It's all of the teachers that support that student. And that's the community of school. That's what Montana does really well.
Elsie Arnson is with the Superintendent of Public Instruction, and it's Nicole Pieper. She's a principal at the junior high and the high school, the Cascade School District, as we're talking about Blue Ribbon Schools here. Just a minute or so before our next quick headline break here. Nicole, are parents now getting more actively involved? Do we still have to sometimes kick and drag ourselves to the PTA meetings?
You know, I think that with the way that the world is today, there is so much pulling on everybody's time. And as a parent that proudly has students, my own two children attend Cascade Public Schools. One is in the third grade, one's in the fifth grade. I thoroughly appreciate the teachers and staff at school to help remind me of things that that are happening in my children's academic lives, because there is so much pulling on a parent's time, and I think that it's always going to be a challenge to try and get parents into the school to support their child's education, not because they don't want to, but because they are pulled in so many different directions. We do attempt to have family nights, and it's been so much easier now with some lifted restrictions on COVID. And we just had a family math night the other night, and parents were able to bring their children in and make math games with their kids to take home and play to help build those math skills. We'll be having family nights for every academic area over the course of the year. That's the plan right now. I think that just the community pride in our school that I think that that's really what matters the most.
It's so cool to hear the recognition of that and being able to be flexible enough to adjust that. We're going to come back after a headline break and talk more about that, about how schools are thinking outside the box. Voices EDU today. First, Brian Bennett has headlines. You know, a bit later on, too, we're going to talk with Amanda Meyer. She is with the Havre Public School District's Education Foundation as the executive director. So as we look at our schools, there's a lot of things that our communities can do in assisting our public and private schools in Montana at the K-12 level. There's just a lot of cool things going on up in the Havre Public School District. So I'll talk about that here in just a little bit. Nicole Pieper is with us. She is the principal of the junior high and high school at the Cascade Public Schools and also superintendent of public instruction, Elsie Arnston, here too. Nicole, again, thanks for all you do here. I want to talk about, getting outside the box. It sounds like, as you talked about, the four-day school week, analyzing student data, you know, reevaluating your growth plans. Are there restrictions to thinking outside the box, or how do you encourage the right kind of thinking outside the box?
Michelle Price, elementary principal, and I, along with our superintendent, Rick Miller, we're constantly researching, you know, what's best practices in education through that professional development that we offer for our teachers. It ends up being about every other Friday from 8 o'clock until noon. We're just always looking at what can we pull in? How can we analyze what we're doing better? What problems are we encountering? What can we do to fix that? And, our teachers are amazing here, and they are so creative and they care so much about their students. That they're a really easy group to lead for Michelle Price and myself and Mr. Miller, because they're always putting students first, and they're coming up with really creative solutions to help support those kids.
Elsie, your thoughts on that, thinking outside the box, and how you encourage that along with making sure that we're going in the right direction as we do that.
Well, I'm going to say local control is where it's at. So what happens in Cascade Public Schools is different than what we just visited with what's happening in Belgrade Public Schools. And that's the key to it, to allow that flexibility. So someone from my level at the state level is looking at how do we license teachers to make sure that there is that local control, that they can hire that community member or the individual that is the best fit for their school. And I think licensing, not only licensing, but in assessment, how do we assess students? And, the federal government's got a lot of ties to Montana, not just because of dollars, but there are restrictions. So my job is to visit with the federal government to see how much more flexibilities that we can offer our local public schools.
Nicole, just any final thoughts? I want to give a shout out, I'll just do it here. Just recently announced the 2022 Teacher of the Year, Mr. Bill Stockton, high school teacher in Arlee. So a shout out there, and we'll probably be talking with Mr. Stockton down the road. But Nicole, any final thoughts?
I'm just really proud. I'm proud to be part of the community. I'm proud to be part of this amazing district. I'm so proud of our teachers, and I'm especially proud of our students for working so hard.
We know it's a tough job, and I think really we are all in on it when it comes to education. Thanks for what you do. Pats on the back for everybody there, okay, from us?
Thank you so much.
Elsie Arnston, good to talk with you. You be well, okay?
I will.
You're listening to a podcast from the live Voices of Montana radio show. Be sure to check out the full podcast page at voicesofmontana.com for a full listing of all our programs. We've been covering Montana issues for more than 20 years. Thanks for listening today. Fastest hour in radio. Was September the fastest month of the year? I mean, boom, and it's gone. We've had some, I hope it's been a good September for y'all. I know we've made some adjustments. School's going again here. So it's time to check in. Voices EDU. We continue that conversation today. Tom Schultz alongside. Thank you for being here. Amanda Meyer is with us now, Executive Director of the Havre Public Schools Education Foundation. Good morning, Amanda. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm great, too. I want to start off. We were up in Havre as part of our tow rope tour a while ago. We happened to be there at a time when the Havre Public Schools Education Foundation was handing out scholarships in a nice ceremony. It was outside. And I have to say, and I think I mentioned this before, it was student after student after student after student after student coming up and receiving assistance with their higher education and with their goals. And not just that. I mean, sure, it may be a check for $500 or $1,000 or $1,500 or even more. And I want to talk about the variances of all that. But it was students being helped with their life goals. And I was just impressed with that. And you guys have done a good job. How you get so much buy-in in your community?
Yeah, it really was a great ceremony. We handed out probably close to $40,000 with, I believe there were 36 recipients this year. So it really was an impressive number that we were able to give out. But it's because of donors. It's really because of the donors that, you know, recognize that these students are, you know, entering a life that they want to pursue, and they would like to give them a better start in that life.
How do then donors get engaged in education? I think that there's probably a large population out there that might be leaning towards something like this, except maybe they're not really thinking about education.
Yeah, I would encourage them to reach out to their local schools, whether that's at the university level or at the high school level. You know, everybody's willing to give out money to students that are looking to pursue education. And really, it can be any kind of major, any school. There's really very little criteria when it comes to handing out money. You know, if whatever you're passionate about, whether it's a specific area or a specific area of study, that, you know, that can definitely go towards a student's education.
Maybe give us some examples of that then, and that might spark some ideas. As you said, it is quite varied, and the amount is quite varied too.
Yeah, we had scholarships this year that were upwards of $5,000, and depending upon what school you go to, but in the state of Montana, that can definitely go a long way to paying your first year of an education. And so those types of scholarships are super important, but even the ones that are at the $500 or $1,000 level, those definitely will bring down that cost for the students.
What are some of those differing ideas in how to support education? People interested in agriculture, I think you hear that an awful lot, or people interested in a career in public education, feeding into those types of goals?
Yeah, when a donor sets up a scholarship, you know, I usually talk to them about what type of criteria they want to set. And so the student, before they even apply, can read about what type of scholarship this is and if it kind of aligns with their goals in life to see if they would qualify. And so that way the donor knows the money is going to somebody that is pursuing something they are passionate about.
And so it's kind of they get to decide in that regard. So 36 recipients. And Amanda Meyer is with us here, Executive Director of the Havre Public Schools Education Foundation. The idea here is to talk about how communities, nonprofit foundations, or, you know, public-private organizations can help these kids along. You know, I even think there are those kids out there who probably are thinking, you know, I don't have the grades for a scholarship. Is that a criteria?
No, not always. I mean, that's, you know, potentially could be a criteria, but a lot of times, you know, donors love reading stories. They love to hear the life story of a student. And when they fill out that application, a lot of them require, you know, some sort of personal bio or essay describing why they have chosen this path in life. And so donors really like to read that. And I have quite a few donors that even select their own recipient. So I will send them the application for that scholarship, and they will select who gets to be the winner.
And so is it their decision entirely? Donors?
Totally up to them, yeah. I mean, if some people don't, you know, when you have 30 or 40 applicants, it can be quite a daunting task mm-hmm. to get through that many applications. So some people don't like to do that sort of work, but a lot of people are very involved in the selection process.
And that's then where a foundation comes in, I presume.
Absolutely, yeah. We're kind of the middleman in that part in connecting students with the donors.
Is there a story you can relate? Now, without giving names, but again, I think of that person who probably is thinking, you know, I'm not going to be able to afford 4 years of public education. Although that should just, you know, there are a lot of ways to achieve higher education without spending $100 million. What comes to mind, Amanda, maybe a student, as you looked across the table and saw in their eyes a real desire to proceed despite all the doubt or challenges they may be facing?
Yeah, just recently we had a donor set up an endowment, and an endowment is money that is invested and only the interest is spent. And so that way the scholarship will live on forever. And so a donor had set up an endowment for a student, a female student entering the science field. And so the student was super excited to go into biology, and she really connected with the donor. And the reason that one is important because it is a four-year scholarship. So many students graduate high school receiving this money for their freshman year of college. But then after that, if they're lucky, the university they're attending might give them some money, but the next 3 years, they're kind of on their own. And so this donor set up a four-year scholarship. So this student will receive that scholarship for all 4 years of school.
That's a cool example. Does every public school system have an education foundation?
I would encourage them to. I mean, there's so many, and it's not just individual people. It's, you know, corporations and grant makers, and a lot of these other types of organizations only want to work with 501c3 nonprofits. And so, you know, the schools could definitely benefit by setting up a foundation just to have that nonprofit status.
Is it hard? Is it hard to manage that? Does it cost a lot of money?
The initial startup, you know, you're going to have to make an investment there, but, you know, it's not substantial, and you'll definitely make it all back on the grants and the corporate donations and the individuals that want to give back to your school. So it's not outrageous.
What makes a good education foundation?
Like I was saying before, you know, really, you know, you're kind of a middleman. You need to understand kind of what the district needs, what the students need, the teachers, those types of needs and wants, and then trying to find donors that relate to that and are, you know, passionate about giving to those types of projects.
What are some of those best steps in finding those donors? How do you connect with nonprofits or corporations and then also connect with the higher education system?
I mean, alumni are always an easy ask. And so they typically, if they had a good experience while they were at your institution, they're, you know, want to give back, and maybe they received a scholarship when they were attending. And so kind of paying it forward is always a good ask.
Is $40,000, overachieving? That's an awful lot of money. This is from the Havre Public Schools Education Foundation, Executive Director Amanda Meyer here. And I don't mean that in a negative way. But it seems to me like that is a very substantial amount of money that you gave away last year. And I suppose you're always trying to raise the bar in that regard. But, talk about that amount in and of itself. That's pretty significant, isn't it?
Yeah, you know, that number is, you know, what we give out every year. That's not just last year. It's been years and years in the making. And so, like I said, the endowment is kind of a way to sustain that number and grow that number year after year. And that's kind of how we've been pushing towards that type of giving from our donors.
How important is it to connect the donor to the recipient? And what kind of relationship develops out of that you have seen?
The ceremony is really great for everybody. It just gives the donor a chance to meet the student, to engage, and, you know, be able to face-to-face not only hand them an award, but it's really a special event for both of them to be able to connect in that way. And I think donors really enjoy it as much as the students.
Give us an example. Give us a few examples of some of the programs, because I know we talked about it slightly, but look down that list and relay that for us so we can maybe create that picture in our minds.
Our scholarships are really all over, across the board. You know, we have some that are for music students and business students and female science students.
All right, what's the name of the music scholarship?
That is the Friends of Music, and so they are kind of a small group of parents and people at the high school that want to support the band and choir program. And so they do kind of a fundraiser every year. And the money that they raise goes towards the scholarships that they give the students after they graduate.
Cool. What's the name of the science or a science scholarship there?
That is our newest one. That was the endowment that I was speaking to earlier. That is the Collegian Hike Scholarship that the donor, actually they were teachers back in at the high school when this donor went to school here, and she gave the endowment in memory of these two science teachers that really made an impact on her life.
Cool. Is there an ag scholarship?
Not specific for ag only, but I mean, that is definitely a local, you know, something that the local community supports. And so that is part of the scholarships, but not anything specifically for just ag students.
Do you get matching dollars from the federal government or the universities?
Not really. I mean, we do apply for grants, and a lot of that money goes towards district projects. You know, and that's another piece of the foundation where we are not only trying to help students after they graduate, but help students while they're still in school. And we do that through building projects or improvements or program improvements. And so that's kind of the other piece, the other half of the foundation of just helping the districts in general.
Well, do you reach out to, or do other public education foundations reach out to you because of the success that you guys have had to go, hey, would you guide us?
You know, I actually came from the Northern Foundation before I started here at the Heber Public Schools. And, you know, I brought a lot of that experience, and I still speak with a lot of the employees up there. And, you know, we're always trying to share ideas and learn from each other. And it's not something, it's not any kind of trade secret that people are wanting to hold back. Where I have found, you know, that everybody's willing to share ideas and success stories.
Well, that's cool. Then so they can contact you, that'd be all right?
Absolutely.
Okay. And hopefully you will. If you guys are out there interested in creating this education foundation for your public school system, or have some ideas for a statewide, you know, talk with Amanda Meyer, Executive Director of the Haver Public Schools Education Foundation, and get going on that. Thank you, Amanda. I appreciate that.
Great. It was great. Thank you.
Yeah, great chatting with you. A couple of notes here as we'll take a quick break. Cybersecurity on the docket for tomorrow. And this goes along with what we're talking about here, the Elks National Foundation Most Valuable Student Scholarship Program now underway. So some concluding thoughts as we roll through Voices EDU today on Voices of Montana.